Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 8th, 2003. Today's session is entitled, What If Healing the Human Psyche Were As Natural As Breathing? Session 1 of State of Mind and the Nature of Wisdom, presented by Rolf Evenson, number EVR 2003-01. Let's listen in.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rolf Evenson. Well, no, it really is. Hello.
Hello.
You made it back.
Do
you have a good hike?
Yes. Okay. My feet were killing me.
Mine were sore, but when I got back too. Did you catch any fish?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I went for breakfast.
Oh, nice. Well, this is, what if healing the human psyche were as natural as breathing? It's the first session of a series called The State of Mind and the Nature of Wisdom. The second one is going to be on dealing with difficult people, including ourselves. And then the third one is going to be about how do we take our Holden state of mind home with us. And then the fourth one is going to be about creativity, about how we as human beings literally create our experience in life moment to moment, whether we're aware of it or not. There's a possibility that that one may not happen because my family and I may need to leave on Friday, so we'll know within the next day or so. So is everyone at the right session? Okay. Welcome. Let me just tell you a little bit about myself so you have an idea of who you're listening to. And then I'd like to kind of lay out how I think today might go. I live in Colorado, but I grew up in Minnesota, grew up in Northfield, Minnesota, went to grade school, middle school, and high school, and college all in the same town, went to St. Olaf. And then I spent roughly 10 years each being a wilderness guide, an Outward Bound instructor, working with groups of people. I was the founding, one of the co-founders of an adventure-based therapy program for adolescents who were addicted to alcohol and drugs during that 10-year period. And then I took a time out and went to divinity school for a year and built wooden boats for a year and worked at the Hurricane Island Outward Bound School teaching sailing off the coast of Maine. And then I decided to become an architect and I went to graduate school and got a graduate degree in architecture and spent 10 years designing surgery centers and medical facilities. My strongest interest was in what I thought of as healing spaces. I was really interested in designing spaces that were healing and uplifting to the human spirit. And then about 7-8 years ago, I decided to start my own company. And what I do is I offer my services as a counselor and a confidant and a consultant to presidents and vice presidents of companies and also leaders of nonprofit organizations. And I guess my specialty is human thought. I sometimes say that what my work is helping business leaders improve the quality of their thinking. And we talk a lot about state of mind because one of the things that we've realized is that in any organization, and this is true of families as well, any group of people, there's often an idea behind it, and there are people involved, and there's some kind of leadership, and there's probably some kind of systems involved. It might be business systems if it's a large business organization. It might just be deciding who's going to do the dishes and take out the garbage if it's a family. But one of the key ingredients that people miss the significance of, and this is certainly true of business leaders in my experience, is state of mind. State of mind is such a huge factor in the quality of our day-to-day experience. And it's such a huge factor in terms of the productivity of an organization or group of people. And it has so much to do with whether or not we enjoy our day. So what I bring to the table here is my personal experience and the reflection that I've done about the human experience and about thought and about state of mind, and my understanding of some principles that were realized by a philosopher named Sidney Banks. And those principles are thought, mind, and consciousness. And I'm just saying this up front because I realize that some of these words are not what you're used to hearing in a Christian context. I'm not theologically trained except for my growing up in the Lutheran Church and my spending a year in divinity school, but I'm not a theologian by any stretch of the imagination. So what I really bring to you is simply some things that make sense to me. And I would not ask you to take anything that I say at face value. I would not ask you to take my word for any of what you're about to hear during any of these sessions. I would simply invite you to come with an open mind and be curious and look for what makes sense to you, what resonates with your common sense, what resonates with your experience in life. Because if you could just have one insight that changes how you see the world, you'll never lose that. But if you learn a bunch of information, research has shown that people often lose most of that in a week or so. Businesses are famous for offering training programs for people to help their teams get along better, for example, or to help their leaders be more inspired or whatever. And they come back to the workplace and they get inspired. They're inspired by the workshop, and within a few days it's gone. And they came home with this big fat notebook and they put the notebook on the shelf and they never open it up again. I have notebooks from places, workshops I've gone to 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I swear, I've never opened them up. I don't have time. I'm too busy working. I'm too busy doing my life to go back and figure out, now, what were we talking about? So I call what I do, the kind of teaching that I do, insight-based learning rather than content-based learning. This is not content-rich material. We can include the content of what we'll be talking about this week in a thimble. But the implications of that knowledge are immense. We could talk about the significance of state of mind, simply say it's important, it makes a difference, and then we could be done. But the implications of really seeing, and I mean seeing with a capital S, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way before. That's something that you can take home with you. That's something that you won't forget. Is this making sense?
Yes.
So you'll find that my teaching style is more contemplative, really, than upbeat and intellectually stimulating. I hope that it will be deeply stimulating. But it won't be because we're going fast and covering lots of ground. I'm just giving you that as a warning so that you're ready for the style of how we'll be talking. Any questions so far? Many years ago, when I was guiding a group of folks through the Canadian wilderness on a canoe trip, we were out for a 25-day canoe journey, and we'd been out for probably a couple of weeks, and I don't know if you're familiar with that country up there, but it's a gorgeous country with lakes connecting to other lakes and streams and so on, and you can literally travel by canoe, if you're willing to portage occasionally, from Lake Superior to the Arctic Ocean. But occasionally, you run to the end of the water system, and then you have to carry over to the next water system. And we were in one of those spots, and the carrying that we had to do was right through a huge swamp. And we thought we could get through by nightfall. We started, I think, maybe 2, 3 in the afternoon. And we were walking along, hanging on to our canoes. Sometimes it was wet enough that we could glide our canoes along in the swamp, but we couldn't get into them because the swamp was too thick to paddle. And so we'd be walking, and generally the mud was up on our thighs, but occasionally we hung on to our canoes because once in a while we'd step into a hole and go into up to our neck in muck. And we were covered with this grime, and there was no fresh water and no way to wash off. And the mosquitoes were thick. So whatever was exposed was getting eaten alive, and we wanted so desperately to get through it that we were pushing. So we're working hard and we're sweating and we're filthy and we are the lunch for about 5 billion mosquitoes.
The study on the book of Job.
Yeah. I'm glad you weren't on that trip. No problem. Well, we were all wondering that by the end of the day, and we realized that we weren't going to make it to the lake because it was getting dark and we were going to spend the night in the swamp. And then we started wondering, where are we going to lie down, because there's no solid ground to even stand on here. And finally, after dark, we found a bit of land that was just a few inches above the muck, and we had to spend the night there, and it was mostly an alder thicket, so there wasn't any room for even one person to lie down straight. We just kind of had to put our sleeping bag on and wedge ourselves between a couple of alder thickets and then just let gravity take us as low as it'll go. It was a long night. And not comfortable. And we woke up the next morning, there was nothing to do but to continue. And we slogged along till about 10 a.m. And I noticed off to the east, we were heading north, I noticed off to the east a huge, beautiful white pine tree, as opposed to the spruce that we were walking through in the spruce bog. And I knew two things about white pine trees. They needed solid, dry ground to grow on. And I could see that this one was a tall one, and I was hoping that I could get up in it and get a clue about where we were and how we got lost and how to get found again. So I asked the group to wait for me. I don't know what else they would have done, but I just asked them not to go anywhere, and I went and climbed this tree. And sure enough, I got up in that tree, and I could see everything. It was like the land became a map, and I could see the water that we'd left the day before. And then over there, I could see the long finger of a lake that we had been trying to hit, but missed. And I could see how we were just going parallel to this body of water. And if we kept going the way that we were going, We'd hit water eventually, but it was going to be a long, long time. But if we just turned east and trekked for about 20 minutes and got over this little hill of land, we were going to be in this beautiful freshwater lake. And this awful, hard journey was going to be over, at least that part of it. So that's what I would invite you to look for as we're finding our way through today and the next few days, is look for that vantage point that allows you to change how you see some aspect of life. That tree is like insight. We had an insight, you could say, that literally changed how we saw our situation. It changed the direction that we were going in. It changed how we felt about being in the swamp. It changed everything. That's the power of insight. Insight can change our experience in life dramatically. One moment we were miserable. We were feeling desperate. We were starting to have, you know, when you're in that low state of mind, you start thinking crazy things, don't you? Yeah. You start thinking, we're never going to get out of this swamp, you know? I remember actually having the thought, and it's just totally absurd. I didn't take it seriously at the time. But I had the thought that I think maybe the whole world has turned to swamp while we've been in the swamp, and there is no way out. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things that I notice about that story. One is that when I came back to talk to my group and tell them what I had seen, how long did it take for their feelings about the situation to change? It was instant, wasn't it? Now, their feelings had completely changed, and yet where were they? They were still in the swamp, weren't they? They were still getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. They were still up to their waist in mud. They were still thirsty, because we hadn't had a drink of fresh water for a day and a half. So nothing about their circumstances had changed. What had changed is their thinking had changed. I had given them new information, they trusted it. And their thinking changed, and therefore their experience literally changed. I was talking to a nurse yesterday, and she was telling me how every single human emotion has a neuropeptide attached. And all basically what that means is that every emotion has a biochemical reaction in the body. So what was happening in that situation is up to that point, they were living in the swamp, we were living in the swamp, we were in a swamp state of mind, weren't we? And we were feeling tired and we were feeling discouraged. And then we had an insight that changed how we saw our situation. And our thinking changed. And we suddenly got energy. And we suddenly felt enthusiastic again, and we regained our hope. And what changed in our body? Our biochemistry all changed, didn't it? When we feel those kinds of feelings, it's a very different mind-body experience. So look for that during this conversation. Look for those insights that can change how you see things. Living in that swamp is very much like what we do in life sometimes. I mean, have you ever felt like you're just thrashing in the swamp and you can't get out? Yeah. And what's interesting is that when we're in that swamp, we experience it as real. Isn't that true? I mean, we weren't slugging along in that swamp and saying, but, you know, we feel really miserable and tired right now, but it's not going to last forever, so I guess I won't feel that way. I mean, I guess you could do that, and it'd probably be helpful. But we didn't do that. We were tired. We were exhausted. We were sick of it. So what is state of mind?
Yeah, I was going to make a comment that this story reminds me that how much your mind controls you. And if you let your mind control you, just your mind is just your mind. It's not everything about you, but if you let your mind control you, you can be frustrated and angry and all those negative feelings. So I think it would be important to try to control your mind somewhat.
So that's one of the questions that come up. Is this about controlling your mind? Is this about controlling your thinking? You know, we've all heard about the power of positive thinking, right? I mean, you're raising a great question, and you're absolutely right. Our thinking plays a huge role in what we're experiencing at any given moment. And what's tricky about it is that our thinking's invisible to us. When I was in the swamp, I wasn't thinking, oh, well, you know, the only reason I'm miserable right now is because I'm thinking bad thoughts. And if somebody had come to me and said, why are you so upset? I could have said, well, it's the damn mosquitoes and it's this and that, you know, and I could have told you exactly why. And if you talk to any person who's stressed or depressed and ask them, why are you stressed out? They'll tell you, well, let me tell you the ways, right? We don't see our thinking's invisible to us. Now we're gonna deal with that some more as we go along, but let's see if we can't come up with a definition for state of mind.
Focus.
Focus? Is that what you said?
What are you focused on?
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you.
What is the person focused on?
What do we focus on?
Focus on?
Yeah. And one way of looking at that is what internal thoughts are we focused on? Any other ideas?
Attitude,
right. That's another word we use for state of mind. Moods. Sometimes people just use moods.
Perspective
is a great one, yeah. I mean, one way of looking at it's a state of mind, if we are in what I would call a healthy state of mind, we have perspective. And that's one way of defining a low state of mind is we've lost perspective. And that's one beautifully simple way of looking at the swamp and the tree story. When we were in the swamp, how much perspective did we have? Not much. And when we're in the swamp of our lives, how much perspective do we have? If I get in a real funky mood, it's hard for me to even see things as far out as my kids and my wife. I can start losing interest in them because I'm so focused on my own problems. But when I climb the tree, now my focus is the whole neighborhood. And I could see things clearly, and I knew what to do. And that happens in life as well. Has anyone here had an experience where you've just been stuck, you just have not known what to do, you've been in pain and your thinking has been going and you feel like you've just been thinking about it until you want to puke and you don't know what to do. And so maybe you give up and you say, I've had it, I'm not going to think about it anymore, and you go do something else, and then the perfect idea comes to you. Has anyone had that experience? Anyone have a story to tell along those lines?
In a way, we've experienced that coming to Holden many years ago when we were at a real transition point in our life. And just being here, when we got back, we knew what we should do. When we came, we didn't know. It was a move and a job change. Mm-hmm. It was stressing us a lot. And I think coming here, I mean, that's kind of what Holden was about, too. Seeing what's important and putting things in perspective.
Right. So one very simple, that's a perfect example. One simple way of looking at state of mind. state of mind is our quality of thinking. At any given moment. Hi, Chell.
Hi, Dad.
Welcome. How was the capture the flag game?
It's boring.
So you came here for some action. Chell, when I last week when I was preparing for one of these classes, Chell said, "So are you going to teach today?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, do you mind if I give you some advice?" And I said, "Well, no, that'd be great." And he said, "Well, when you're talking to those people, don't talk to them like you talk to me." And I said, "Well, why not?" And he said, "Because when you talk to me, it's really boring." So I will try not to be boring, Chell. And if you decide you want to leave, that's perfectly okay.
You're still playing.
Okay. So state of mind is the quality of our thinking in any given moment. Now, one of the things that's so interesting to me about state of mind is that it constantly changes, doesn't it? Our state of mind ebbs and flows. Sometimes we're in what you might call a healthy state of mind, and then sometimes we're in an unhealthy state of mind, or a low state of mind, or we're in a funk. And when you look at nature, it makes so much sense to me that that's the case. I mean, everything ebbs and flows. There are the seasons, and there's hot and cold, and there are the ebb and flow of the tides, and the rising and the setting of the sun. Nature is just a whole series of changes and ebbs and flows. And that's what our state of mind does. But where we get in trouble is that we're not comfortable when we're in a low state of mind. We want to fix it. And the thing that I didn't know about state of mind was that when my state of mind dropped, I didn't realize that the quality of my thinking dropped. Does that make sense to you? Let me tell you a story that's a perfect example. About 2 years ago, it was late winter, and I had been working too hard, and I was getting tired, and I was getting grumpy, and I was getting discouraged. And I was starting to get into arguments with my kids, and I was starting to see my family as an obstacle to my own happiness. And I was starting to be discouraged about our finances. And I was starting to feel overwhelmed by work. Has anyone ever felt that way? And so my wife, Lori, bless her, said, "Rolf, I think you need a break. Why don't you go up to Emil's cabin for a few days, and don't come back until you're better." And so I had enough wisdom or common sense in me, even though I was really in a kind of a funk, to know that she was right and that this sounded pretty good. And so I took her up on her offer. I called my friend, and sure enough, the cabin was available, and I went up for 4 days. And the only requirement that I had of myself was that for 24 hours a day while I was there, I could do whatever I wanted. So I slept a lot for the first couple days because I was exhausted. I tell people in my retreats that I do for businesses that if they fall asleep during the retreat, that's okay. And they're shocked by that. But the way, what I say about it is that when we quiet down, our wisdom starts coming up again. And the, what's the first thing our wisdom tells us when we're exhausted? We need a nap. It's so simple, isn't it? So I slept and I read and I went skiing and I went mountain biking and whatever I felt like. And then I started getting inspired and I started reading some inspiring books. And then I started doing some strategic planning for my business and just got excited about life again. And after 4 days, it was time to go home. And I arrived and walked in the door and I was flabbergasted. I was absolutely flabbergasted at all the work that my wife, Lori, and my kids had done to improve themselves while I was gone. I just thought that was so nice of them. Well, you see what happened, don't you? They didn't change. The circumstances didn't change. My work didn't change. My finances didn't change. My kids didn't change. What changed? My state of mind changed. And when my state of mind improved, what improved along with it? My thinking. So instead of thinking all these glum thoughts and creating this glum experience of life, now I was filled with appreciation. Do you see how that works?
And well, it worked because your wife told you to get out. I mean, if she hadn't said that, somebody hadn't noticed that, maybe you'd still be there. I mean, you had somebody that said, that cared about you and said, you need to change your situation.
Right. It's really helpful having a wife that's wiser than you are. It helps in so many ways.
Because that's why I think people get frustrated about it, is that they can't get out of that. Nobody is telling them, shaking them up. Or, I don't know, or you don't, you know, sometimes maybe you don't listen. You don't want to listen. You just want to... You just stay there.
Sometimes we just kind of want to sit there and fret, don't we? Chill?
You call Mom stupid sometimes.
Did I just call her stupid?
Well, remember on the trip up here?
Some ways it seems to me that human beings just work. That what we're pointing to, or what I'm trying to point to, is how life works for all of us, and how our state of mind works, and how it affects what we experience. I think it's huge. I think it's a huge factor in personal and corporate experience, if you will. For example, the other day I was doing the dishes with a team right up here. And we were all in a healthy state of mind, and we had a ball. We just were having water fights and telling jokes and singing songs, and we just had a ball. And we did all the dishes in 50 minutes. So we were working fast, but we were in a wonderful state of mind. So life is just easier, and relationships are easier when we're in a healthy state of mind. Does that make sense to you? I mean, do we agree on that? Now, if you take the flip side of that, I remember sometimes when we wanted to go cross-country skiing and Chell wasn't interested. I mean, he went along, but he really didn't want to be there. And so I don't know how many of you have gone cross-country skiing with an unhappy six-year-old. Has anyone ever had that experience? You don't get very far, do you? And I remember what happened was that my wife and I would take turns being with Chell. You know, and one of us would burn out, we'd hand him off to the other one, do the big handoff. And after we'd done that for a while, we were just both in such a funk that we just said, forget it, and we turned around and went home. Now the other day, 2 days ago, Chell, when was it when we did that hike? 3 days ago? He went with Mom yesterday and me the day before.
Yeah, 2 days ago.
Yeah. And we had the most beautiful time. So the simplest things in life are effortless and fun and joyful when we're in a healthy state of mind, but they are painful and they are difficult when we're not. So let's talk a little bit more about why that is. And then we need to talk about what to do when our state of mind isn't what we think it should be. And we need to talk about wisdom. Can everybody read this?
Yes.
It's not me.
Can you see it, Chell?
Yeah, I can see it, but I can't read it.
Okay, well, I'll read it for you. Dysfunctional DY or DI?
DY.
DY? Dysfunctional, someone who's just basically caved in and can't get out of bed, right? And the result is paralysis. Then we might move up to a reactive state of mind where we experience a lot of distress and panic and fear. And then we move up to just plain old stressed, which leads to fatigue and burnout. You'd be amazed at how many companies, that's the culture. Or ministers. It's amazing how the culture is that you work harder than you can, and you get out of balance, and it leads to fatigue and ultimately burnout. Now, a higher level of state of mind would be a calm state of mind, perhaps, an alert state of mind. We're just simply calm and we're alert. We're able to focus and therefore be more productive. And oftentimes when clients come to me, that's what they're hoping for. You know, they're here, or at worst, you know, or even worse, they're maybe down here, they're fighting, and they've got groups that are fighting and not getting along, but hopefully they're at least just stressed out. And they want this. And so the way to get there is to have more calm and more calm state of mind collectively and individually. What they often don't realize is you can go far beyond calm to a reflective state of mind, where we can begin to access personal insight and wisdom. And we can go beyond that to an inspired state of mind, and the results of those are creativity and genius. So you can see where in your life, if you're spending more time here than you are here, our lives get much easier and they get much nicer and they get much more creative. And the other thing that's interesting to me is that I think this is the area that we're designed for. This is how God made us. Because how long, if we're down here, how long can we keep that going? It's finite, isn't it? We have so many hours, we have so much energy, we have so much commitment, but eventually we hit the wall or we fall off the train. But we can do this forever. We can live in that healthy state of mind forever. And there's no limit to the number of insights we can have in our lifetime. Have you ever thought about that? None. Okay. Any questions about this? Is this making sense to you? And do you see how all of us kind of go up and down here? And does it make sense to you that that's a natural process? That natural ebb and flow? Sometimes it has nothing to do with circumstances. Sometimes we just wake up feeling kind of glum.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Pardon me?
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, I'd like to connect this with spiritual, you know, as a Christian. I'd like to see how God can help us.
So how does this
say
work?
That? Hmm?
So you're wondering how this...
I'm wondering how... I don't know how to say it.
Well, connecting with God can certainly be a way of changing your state of mind.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, spending an hour in church, for example, it can be a wonderful way of changing your state of mind. What are some other ways that work beautifully?
Prayer
works beautifully.
Music
works beautifully.
Art.
Reading the Bible.
The Word of Absolution.
Pardon me?
The Word of Absolution.
The Word of Absolution.
Sometimes a good night's sleep will do it.
Yeah, now remember my story about how stressed out I was. I went to the cabin. Yeah. I didn't do anything except sleep and rest. And so that's where the name of this session is, what if healing the human psyche were as natural as breathing? How many times have you been stressed out and simply gone on vacation or come to Holden or been, you know, taken some time out to play with your kids or gone on a drive, and your state of mind comes back to health? That suggests to me that's our natural state. I mean, if it wasn't, we'd have to do something to get there, or we'd have to work to get there, or we'd need something to happen to get there. Now, don't take my word for this, but that's just what I see. What I see in myself and in all the people I know, when we are rested, and when we drop our busy-mindedness, what tends to come out naturally is a healthy state of mind. How does this resonate with any of you? Do you experience it this way?
One thing that I wanted to say was, in your question, is that when I thought about Jesus, and that it just seems to me that when Jesus was on earth, he got it. He just got this that we're trying to get all the time. And those three top things was what he had all the time. But there's lots of places in the New Testament where Jesus leaves the crowd and goes and takes care of himself.
Exactly.
And that's what I think we miss in the whole New Testament, is that Jesus is trying to give us this message. He's trying to tell us, you have to take care of yourself. You have to go away from the crowd, de-stress yourself, or whatever he was saying. And he shows us that over and over and over. And then he also directs us to go out and heal the world. So, you know,
that's a powerful point. Yeah. I mean, isn't that true? I'm not a theologian, I'm not a minister, but it seems to me when Jesus got troubled, when he got scared, he took a time out. You know, one way or the other. I mean, he would go someplace to pray, or he would walk into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. And it seems to me that he saw how that could renew his spirit. And it certainly is true, it seems to me, for all of us. And that seems to make sense, doesn't it? That he was God, but he was also human, and we're human. So what is wisdom?
Well, according to the Bible, that's my understanding, is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's my understanding.
Okay.
From the Bible.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
And I think that runs counter to at least the culture that I live in, because I think one thing that contaminates this, at least in the circles that I live in, is that you have to have money to have this. It's required in order to really have peace of mind, you have to have money. And you have to have lots of money, and it has to be money that's secure.
That's an interesting point. Now, what is... I'd like to point out that what you just said, Chell.
I'm going to go play basketball. I'll put you back.
I can't...
That was not staged. that was horrifying, is what that was.
That's your attitude. So. To us, it was exemplary. You know, it was great.
Thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate that, and I appreciate all of you being so flexible with it.
Well, that was just normal life.
It was, wasn't it? I hate it when normal life comes in.
Spoils your wisdom.
I know. Yeah.
Just the thought about wisdom. It's sort of the meaning of knowledge. It's sort of what its meaning is, intrinsic.
Okay, that's interesting. So knowledge is maybe we could say that knowledge is what we know. It's some body of knowledge that we have, some valid
information.
And so you're saying that, let's see, knowledge plus meaning equals wisdom.
See, I say knowledge plus application equals wisdom.
Okay, so you don't want just information. You want to know how to apply it.
Well, people know right and wrong, but continue to choose. You know, I mean, knowledge is great, but I could tell you that that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. But if I don't reflect that in my life, it means nothing.
So I'm trying to think of how to, what that, can you encapsulate that in terms of our conversation here for me?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, I just always associate kind of, you know, somebody who's wise as somebody who is not only has information that they could, you know, regurgitate to you, but also that reflects in their life that, you know, the choices that they make.
All right, so wisdom, so wise person, there would be consistency, authenticity between what they knew and what they did.
Yeah.
The connection there.
Yeah. And then what I always just remember is that knowledge and application, to me, that equals wisdom.
It's almost like saying knowledge plus.
Is that behavior?
Ethics. Or behavior equals wisdom.
Well,
don't you think you should add one more thing to that, and you should add experiences?
Experience. Now, what is experience?
Is you run into a situation, and how you react, and what you find from that, and how you change, maybe?
So you've lived through things in life.
In life, which gives you.
And you've learned things from that.
And you learn things from that, which is part of knowledge. But I think experiences, it's not just. I mean, sometimes say knowledge, you think of books or something, but that's not true.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's experience.
Situations in which you have had the opportunity to apply your knowledge. And then if we go back to that issue of application, if you think about your very best leaders, regardless of what their ideology is. What made them great leaders was not their substantive knowledge, but it was their substantive knowledge coupled with their ability to exercise it in particular situations, in particular levels of measured responses, sort of uncommon common sense, if you will.
Well, I think that leadership is another step beyond wisdom. There's going to be a lot of people who have wisdom that don't act. I guess you could define it as needing to be application, but there are people that do wise acts, and there are people that just kind of reflect and think and maybe don't act very much. And so there's sort of a need for some kind of motivation or some kind of use of the wisdom to take it towards leadership, it seems like.
So is wisdom something that exists outside of us, or is it something that we access directly? Hear it directly.
I think it's something I'm not sure if this answers your question. I think it evolves. I think it's an evolutionary. It's a trait that is the result of evolution.
Huh. Does age have anything to do with wisdom?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. No. This is fun. How many say no? The question is, does wisdom have anything to do with age?
I
have some no's. Raise your hand if you're a no. Raise your hand if it's a yes. So we're kind of evenly split there.
It's yes and no.
Yes and yes.
I didn't give you the options.
because in my opinion, experience is nothing. Life experiences are great, but it doesn't make you any wiser if you continue to make the same mistakes that you made.
It's not a necessary
age. That's why my theory of knowledge, it is knowledge. It's something that you know. You know that if you do this again, this is the consequence.
Okay.
And you can still choose to do that again and just have the same consequences So knowledge is not an action. Wisdom is active. You can't just be wise. I can't just sit here and be wise. I have to actually do something to show my wisdom. Because I can have all the knowledge in the world and be worthless.
You can be pretty smart and not be very wise.
Exactly.
And you can be, excuse me.
No, I was just going to say, sometimes wisdom though is knowing when not to act.
Exactly, but yeah. You are acting.
Yes.
You are choosing to not take any action.
Yeah. Right.
Your comment a minute ago was really right on. You can be really smart and not very wise.
Yes, And I would suggest, I've run into some elderly folks that are not very wise. And I've experienced wisdom coming from my kids. For example, back when I was an architect, there was a time when we had massive deadlines, and they were just ridiculous looking back on them. But just to give you an idea, on Thanksgiving Day, I worked till 3 o'clock in the morning. That was Thanksgiving Day, and it had just been like that for weeks. So anyway, one day I came home from work, and I basically just had it. I was just exhausted, and I didn't have enough bandwidth to have conversations with anybody, including my kids. And my kids were there, and you know they wanted to talk, and I was too tired to have a conversation, so I would sort of try to humor them and then get on to something else. And finally, I sat at the table and I was hiding behind the newspaper. And I don't know that I was even reading it. It was just, don't bug me is what that meant. And Chell, who was about 6 years old at the time, came up to me and he just started rubbing my back. And he said, Daddy, maybe you just need a nap. You see, I had given him nothing but nastiness since I got home. And he saw all through that. He didn't react to any of that. He went straight to love. And in that moment, the wisdom in me which was pretty buried, the healthy state of mind, the innate health in me responded to this beautiful, vibrant health in him. And I just took him in my arms and held him and wept. Because I was so filled with gratitude to have such a beautiful son. Now, do you see how quickly our state of mind changes? And do you see how wisdom can come in surprising ways? And I would suggest that it has nothing to do with age. It has nothing to do with our education. It has nothing to do with our IQ. It has nothing to do with our station in life or our economic status. But God,
that man back there said it was all dependent on the amount of money you had. And you sort of, I think Cheryl left then. But I was hoping you'd address that.
Okay. You're right.
Well, you got distracted.
I got distracted. Exactly.
But I just wanted him to explain that further and have your reaction.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about thought. Because that's really, there are three principles that Sidney Banks.
Before you do that, okay. I suspect that before Chell rubbed your back, that you had something inside yourself that you ignored, telling the wisdom that you had, that you were ignoring, that you needed to pay attention to slow down.
I think I was so much into driving myself.
But I think there was something inside you that was there that you just didn't pay any attention to.
I'm sure that's probably true. And then he just brought it out. He touched that in me.
Did you have to be wise enough to recognize? I mean, you could have easily been conned in and pumped out of the room. And, you know.
Yeah, I could have said, you know.
You gotta
get lost and stomped up to the bedroom.
Yeah, recognize that. That's wisdom. I mean, that's wisdom.
Yeah.
Being able to go.
And you see, I understand that that's wisdom, and I knew it was wisdom, and as grumpy as I was, I couldn't say no to it.
Well, can you explain yourself a little bit more as far as, because I find that fascinating, that point. And that's what I was saying before, you had your wife, and it's at that point, you know, where there's a change, or there isn't a change, that we all have access to that, do we have access to that? Is that what you're talking about?
I think that we have things inside us that because of our head knowledge, that we're not paying attention to. That is the wisdom speaking. And I don't know how to explain that any better, except that when I listen to people and they begin to talk about feelings and then they begin to locate and then they begin to make some connections, then it gets into their thought. But the wisdom, I don't know how to really explain it other than I think it was there. I think we have it, but we miss it because we're so much in our head and with things around us.
I think that's really an interesting comment because when you told the story, you said that your son got up and went over and rubbed your back, and that sense of a body memory or a connection that brought to the surface something in you that resonated, that was beyond words or beyond, you know, what we like to think about as thought, but something much, much deeper that you responded to, and that's why I was so taken by the story, because he was very wise. He didn't say anything to begin with. He rubbed, he touched you.
Yeah.
Physical.
Yeah. That loving touch is so powerful.
Yeah.
In terms of, one way of seeing this in terms of state of mind, remember, if we think of healthy state of mind, and a low state of mind, we're always somewhere on that spectrum, right? And I had, and because of fatigue primarily, I had dropped, I was down here. And so in that sense, that part of me was blocked, and what it was blocked by is when my state of mind dropped, the quality of my thinking dropped. And so what kinds of things was I thinking? You can just imagine. I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I don't have time for this, I don't know how I'm going to get through the next week, I haven't slept well in 3 days, etc., etc. Now that thinking is what's creating my experience. That thinking is what's got me stressed and bummed out. Now when Chill touched me and rubbed my back and asked me if I needed a nap, what happened to my state of mind? It elevated. I felt touched. You know, I think of that as being touched by the grace of God. I was touched by the grace of God through the loving hand of my son. And that brought me into a healthy state of mind. And in a healthy state of mind, now my thinking has changed, hasn't it? Now it occurs to me to take my son into my lap. You know, where just minutes before, I didn't even want to be in the same room with them. I really didn't. You see how powerful that is? When our state of mind changes, it changes our thinking and it changes what we do. One way of looking at this, some people call this the thinking path. Let's see. It starts with a thought, which leads to a feeling, which leads to our state of mind. Does that make sense so far? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking how tired I am, I'm thinking how depressed I am, I'm thinking how I don't have any bandwidth.
that leads to feelings of depression and fatigue and all that. That's a state of mind. And based on that state of mind, I do what makes sense. Human beings do what makes sense to us. Based on our state of mind, based on what we're thinking. And our actions lead to the results. That's true in an organization, but it's also true individually. So if my actions are I'm gonna be grumpy and I'm gonna hide behind the newspaper, what's the results? We have a cold, prickly evening together, right? That's the result.
Do you think that, I was just thinking about all these comments, do you think that somehow, because your son touched you, whatever that did inside of you, that brought you, at least that brought you to the present? And if we could just be in the present, maybe our state of mind would just naturally go up? You think that's possible?
I think that's powerful. What keeps us from a healthy state of mind is our own thinking. And in fact, are we more present here, or are we more likely to be present here? You know, I would suggest that we're much more present here.
I like the illustration about your relationship with your son, and I like to visualize myself, the relationship with my God, Heavenly Father, that let him embrace me. And even though I might go through the shade of the death, and, you know, and he's guiding me, and this kind of thinking, I just get this kind of thought keep in my mind. And so you will help me to walk through. I won't stay in the shadow of the death
right.
forever. I will just walk through, and he will walk with me,
right.
walk through this path and come to the light someday.
Right.
So I like the illustration, and I like to put this to connect with my God. And
yeah.
It's a healing power.
Yeah. See, that makes perfect sense to me. I can relate to my wife much better when I'm present, when my mind isn't full of all my own thinking. Then I'm much more receptive to insight, to wisdom. I listen better. And it makes sense to me that the same would be true in relating to the divine. If I'm just caught up in my thinking and living in my stressed out, depressed state, there's not much room for the divine for me. But it seems like it comes naturally when we're in that healthy state of mind. And I think that what's so helpful for people to realize and to understand is the role that thought plays in this. That's what we should talk about next. Oh my gosh. We're almost out of time. You know what this feels like, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in this situation?
Take my mind out.
Pick it up the next session.
Well, that's true. We're going to have some more sessions, so we don't have to do it all today. So I think since we have about 15 minutes left, we really need to talk about how the role that thought plays in all of this, because it's hugely important. Would that be okay if we spent the last 10, 15 minutes doing that? Okay. Because we've already talked about how state of mind is the quality of our thinking, right, at any given moment. So thought is at the core of it. That's what this book is about. These books, by the way, are both in the Holden bookstore. The Missing Link by the philosopher Sidney Banks is talking about thought. That's what The Missing Link is. And it's a wonderful little book. And then The Speed Trap is by my friend Joe Bailey. And this is a wonderful book that talks about the principles of thought, mind, and consciousness, which we're about to talk about. And then it tells wonderful stories about how it applies to real life situations. There's a story about Chell and Aaron and me in here. If you get the book, see if you can figure out which one it is. He doesn't use our real names. Okay. I would ask you for 10 or 15 minutes to take your thinking caps off and see if you can listen with a soft focus. What you're looking for is an insight. So don't worry if you don't get it, if it doesn't make sense to you right off the bat, don't worry about it. We can talk about it again tomorrow. Okay? So I just ask you to just sit back and relax and listen to this. These principles are the principles of thought, mind, and consciousness as realized by Sidney Banks and talks about in the book. First of all, let's just talk for a moment about why principles are helpful. Principles, first of all, are not concepts. They're not somebody's thought content. A great example of a principle is the principle of gravity, the law of gravity. Before the law of gravity was discovered, did the law of gravity exist? It did, didn't it? And there were thousands of years when people were noticing what they could see, smell, taste, and touch, the movement of the planets, the rising and the setting of the sun, the ebb and flow of the tides. When we were in Alaska kayaking last summer, the tides were 32 feet. The power behind something like that is absolutely staggering. What it would take to fill a bay 100 miles long with 32 feet of water and then take all the water out in less than 24 hours or 12 hours or whatever it is. It's amazing. And for thousands of years, people were trying to make sense of this. They didn't know why it was that way. And because they didn't know, they got curious, and they came up with literally hundreds of theories, scientific theories, and theological theories, and astrological theories, and all the rest, trying to make sense of what seemed very mystical and complex. Does this make sense so far? That's what we do when we don't understand something. We just come up with a lot of complexity trying to understand it. And then Isaac Newton discovered, he dropped the apple or saw the apple drop, and he realized, oh, there's this natural law of gravity at work here. That makes sense of all this complexity. Now all of a sudden you have a single, powerful, simple principle that helps explain immense complexity. Do you see that? Now, all those hundreds of theories weren't needed anymore, were they? Because people, once they understood gravity, could understand the movement of the planetary bodies. So what I'm suggesting is that the principles of thought, mind, and consciousness that we're about to talk about are those kinds of grounding principles that explain human experience. And the first principle is thought. Now remember, this is not our personal thinking. This has nothing to do with philosophies and the content of our thinking. This is the capacity to think, that human beings have the capacity to create our experience via thought. He recognized that that's what we do. We have this capacity, this underlying foundational capacity to create our experience as human beings using thought, using the gift of thought. So I'm just going to call it the capacity to create. Okay? Now, we've also have the principle of consciousness. Now, if you don't like these words, find words that you like, okay? It's the words are not what's important here. The words are pointing to, it's like, it's not, the word gravity is not what's important. What's important is that we understand the law behind that word that's actually explaining physical phenomena in the universe. Consciousness is simply the fact that we have the capacity to experience what we think as real. So not only do we think it, but we live it. If we think depressing thoughts, we actually experience a depressing world. And my wife looks different to me when I'm down than she does when I'm inspired. It's unbelievable how it changes. And it has nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with my thinking. You see that? So consciousness is the second principle. Thought, I don't know if it's second or first or whatever, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, he called mind. And mind is simply the source, because if you start with thought, remember that thought path? Thought gives you feelings, gives you state of mind, and so on. Well, the question comes, what comes before thought? And he realized that there has to be something before thought, and he called it mind. And mind is simply the source. Universal,
not the brain.
Universal, not the brain. The universal, this is a formless spiritual source. When I'm talking to businesses, I basically leave it there, but I feel totally comfortable calling it God. Sometimes people refer to it as universal creative intelligence. But our common sense tells us that our thinking has to come from somewhere, right? That there's this creative intelligence, this creative energy that is the spark of life that flows through all human beings and flows through all of life. And when you put all of these together, you have the essence of human experience. So this is why I can be a great guy one day and be a jerk another day. Because my thinking changed. And when my thinking changed, my state of mind changes, and guess what? We all do what makes sense to us given the state of mind we're in. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I kind of have to laugh because I see myself losing my temper with my kids or being grumpy with Lori, or getting upset over some stupid thing, and I think, man, so here I am. I'm the one who teaches state of mind and thought and all of that, and here I am making a complete fool of myself. Well, we all do what makes sense given what we're thinking. I have colleagues who work with people in federal prison. And they teach them these principles, and it's so freeing to them because they realize for the first time I was just doing what made sense to me given my state of mind and what I was thinking. Now, some people get in the habits of low-quality thinking, don't we? And some of us some people grow up in families that have very dysfunctional thought systems. And we inherit that thought system. And if we don't recognize that it's just a thought system, we can take it seriously. And it can run our life. And for some of these prisoners, it has just changed their life when they realize my gosh, I don't, that's not me. I don't have to be that way. I have this innate health in me that comes out naturally when I drop my busy-mindedness, my crazy thinking. It just comes out. I'm feeling it right now. And now what makes sense to me is completely different. I was at a meeting a few weeks ago, and I came down the stairs, and there was a guy. He looked like he might have been Black or Hispanic or a combination, and he was about 5'10" tall and about 4 feet wide. He must have been close to 300 pounds, just a huge guy. And he had sleeveless muscle shirt on, and he had tattoos over his body, all over his body. And as we walked down the stairs, our eyes met, and we just, there was just this wonderful connection between us. And I just walked over to him and said, "I don't know who you are, but I just have to meet you." And we just got to talking. And he had been in prison for 20 years. And then he discovered the connection between his thinking and what he'd been doing all that time. And he was set free, because now he realized that if thinking is creating my experience and my state of mind, and that's what's causing me to make the decisions I've made, I can change my thinking. My thinking can change. And then my world can change. There was a perfect example of that in Vespers last week. Christine gave a sermon about South Africa. Did anyone hear that? She was talking about Nelson Mandela. Remember that story? What's the name? Robben's Island? Is that what's the name of the island? And Nelson Mandela and these other people had been on in this horrible, horrible prison for 20 years or whatever it was. And then they got inspired and decided to change this prison into a university. Have you heard this story? They changed it into a university. Now somebody might have said, well, that might be difficult because you have no money, no facilities, no teachers. And you're all doing hard labor all day long. So we're, you know, when, how is this university going to happen? Do you see the power of an idea? You see the power of somebody changing their mind from we are in prison to we are in university. And they found a way to start teaching one another and to start getting some materials in, and they would take a lunch break and they would have lectures at lunch and they would have lectures in the evening. And there are people that were in that prison that got advanced degrees. That is the power of thought and inspiration. And as I see it, and again, I'm not a theologian, but if we have this amazing innate health in us, and if we have this innate capacity to heal ourselves psychologically by just getting the rest that we need and finding, doing what makes sense to us, who gave that to us? And you look at the universe, I mean, all of nature, there's self-healing built into it. We all have this natural immune system that fights off disease. And it makes so much sense to me that we have this natural psychological immune system built in as well. Well, with the sound of the bell, thank you so much. Yes.